Chapter 21. The door to the pit closes behind me, and I am alone. I have not walked this tunnel since the day of the choosing ceremony. I remember how I walked it then, my footsteps unsteady, searching for light. I walk it sure-footed now. I don't need light anymore. It has been 4 days since I spoke to Tori. Since then, Erudite has released 2 articles about abnegation. The first article accuses abnegation of withholding luxuries, like cars and fresh fruit, from the other factions in order to force their belief in self-denial on everyone else. When I read it, I thought of Will's sister, Kara, accusing my mother of hoarding goods. The second article discusses the failings of choosing government officials based on their faction, asking why only people who define themselves as selfless should be in government. It promotes a return to the democratically elected political systems of the past. It makes a lot of sense, which makes me suspect it is a call for revolution wrapped in the clothing of rationality. I reach the end of the tunnel. The net stretches across the gaping hole, just as it did when I last saw it. I climb the stairs to the wooden platform, where 4 pulled me to solid ground and grabbed the bar that the net is attached to. I would not have been able to lift my body up with just my arms when I first got here, but now I do it almost without thinking and roll into the center of the net. Above me are the empty buildings that stand at the edge of the hole, and the sky. It is dark blue and starless. There is no moon. The articles troubled me, but I had friends to cheer me up, and that is something. When the first one was released, Christina charmed one of the cooks in the Dauntless Kitchens, and he let us try some cake batter. After the second article, Uriah and Marlene taught me a card game, and we played for 2 hours in the dining hall. Tonight, though, I want to be alone. More than that, I want to remember why I came here, and why I was so determined to stay here that I would jump off a building for it, even before I knew what being dauntless was. I work my fingers through the holes in the net beneath me. I wanted to be like the dauntless I saw at school. I wanted to be loud and daring and free like them. But they were not members yet. They were just playing at being dauntless. And so was I, when I jumped off that roof. I didn't know what fear was. In the past 4 days, I faced 4 fears. In one, I was tied to a stake, and Peter set a fire beneath my feet. In another, I was drowning again, this time in the middle of an ocean, as the water raged around me. In the third, I watched as my family slowly bled to death. And in the fourth, I was held at gunpoint and forced to shoot them. I know what fear is now. Wind rushes over the lip of the hole and washes over me, and I close my eyes. In my mind, I stand at the edge of the roof again. I undo the buttons of my gray abnegation shirt, exposing my arms, revealing more of my body than anyone else has ever seen. I ball the shirt up and hurl it at Peter's chest. I open my eyes. No, I was wrong. I didn't jump off the roof because I wanted to be like the dauntless. I jumped off because I already was like them, and I wanted to show myself to them. I wanted to acknowledge a part of myself that abnegation demanded that I hide. I stretch my hands over my head and hook them in the net again. I reach with my toes as far as I can, taking up as much of the net as possible. The night sky is empty and silent, and for the first time in 4 days, so is my mind. I hold my head in my hands and breathe deeply. Today the simulation was the same as yesterday. Someone held me at gunpoint and ordered me to shoot my family. When I lift my head, I see that 4 is watching me. I know the simulation isn't real, I say. You don't have to explain it to me, he replies. You love your family. You don't want to shoot them. Not the most unreasonable thing in the world. And the simulation is the only time I get to see them, I say. Even though he says I don't, I feel like I have to explain why this fear is so difficult for me to face. I twist my fingers together and pull them apart. My nail beds are bitten raw. I've been chewing them as I sleep. I wake to bloody hands every morning. I miss them. You ever just miss your family? 4 looks down. No, he says eventually. I don't, but that's unusual. It is unusual. So unusual it distracts me from the memory of holding a gun to Caleb's chest. What was his family like that he no longer cares about them? I pause with my hand on the doorknob and look back at him. Are you like me? I ask him silently. Are you divergent? Even thinking the word feels dangerous. His eyes hold mine, and as the silent seconds pass, he looks less and less stern. I hear my heartbeat. I have been looking at him too long, but then he has been looking back, and I feel like we are both trying to say something the other can't hear, though I could be imagining it. Too long, and now even longer. My heart even louder, his tranquil eyes swallowing me whole. I push the door open and hurry down the hallway. I shouldn't be so easily distracted by him. I shouldn't be able to think of anything but initiation. The simulations should disturb me more. They should break my mind, as they have been doing to most of the other initiates. Drew doesn't sleep. He just stares at the wall, curled in a ball. Al screams every night from his nightmares and cries into his pillow. My nightmares and chewed fingernails pale by comparison. Al's screams wake me every time, and I stare at the springs above me and wonder what on earth is wrong with me, that I still feel strong when everyone else is breaking down. Is it being divergent that makes me steady, or is it something else? When I get back to the dormitory, I expect to find the same thing I found the day before, a few initiates lying on beds or staring at nothing. Instead, they stand in a group on the other end of the room. Eric is in front of them with a chalkboard in his hands, which is facing the other way, so I can't see what's written on it. I stand next to Will. What's going on? I whisper. I hope it isn't another article, because I'm not sure I can handle any more hostility directed at me. Rankings for stage 2, he says. I thought there weren't any cuts after stage 2, I hiss. There aren't. It's just a progress report, sort of. I nod. The sight of the board makes me feel uneasy, like something is swimming in my stomach. Eric lifts the board above his head and hangs it on the nail. When he steps aside, the room falls silent, and I crane my neck to see what it says. My name is in the first slot. Heads turn in my direction. I follow the list down. Christina and Will are 7th and 9th, respectively. Peter is 2nd. But when I look at the time listed by his name, I realize that the margin between us is conspicuously wide. Peter's average simulation time is 8 minutes. Mine is 2 minutes, 45 seconds. Nice job, Triss, Will says quietly. I nod, still staring at the board. I should be pleased that I am ranked first, but I know what that means. If Peter and his friends hated me before, they will despise me now. Now I am Edward. It could be my eye next, or worse. I search for Al's name and find it in the last slot. The crowd of initiates breaks up slowly, leaving just me, Peter, Will, and Al standing there. I want to console Al, to tell him that the only reason that I'm doing well is that there's something different about my brain. Peter turns slowly, every limb infused with tension. A glare would have been less threatening than the look he gives me. A look of pure hatred. He walks toward his bunk, but at the last second, he whips around and shoves me against a wall, a hand on each of my shoulders. I will not be outranked by a stiff, he hisses, his face so close to mine I can smell his stale breath. How did you do it, huh? How the hell did you do it? He pulls me forward a few inches, and then slams me against the wall again. I clench my teeth to keep from crying out, though the pain from the impact went all the way down my spine. Will grabs Peter by his shirt collar and drags him away from me. Leave her alone, he says. Only a coward bullies a little girl. A little girl? Scoffs Peter, throwing off Will's hand. Are you blind or just stupid? She's going to edge you out of the rankings and out of Dauntless, and you're going to get nothing, all because she knows how to manipulate people and you don't. So when you realize that she's out to ruin us all, you let me know. Peter storms out of the dormitory. Molly and Drew follow him, looks of disgust on their faces. Thanks, I say, nodding to Will. Is he right? Will asks quietly. Are you trying to manipulate us? How on earth would I do that? I scowl at him. I'm just doing the best I can, like anyone else. I don't know. He shrugs a little. By acting weak so we pity you? And then acting tough to psych us out? Psych you out? I repeat. I'm your friend. I wouldn't do that. He doesn't say anything. I can tell he doesn't believe me. Not quite. Don't be an idiot, Will, says Christina, hopping down from her bunk. She looks at me without sympathy and adds, she's not acting. Christina turns and leaves, without banging the door shut. Will follows. I am alone in the room with Al. The first and the last. Al has never looked small before, but he does now, with his shoulders slumped and his body collapsing on itself like crumpled paper. He sits down on the edge of his bed. Are you all right? I ask. Sure, he says. His face is bright red. I look away. Asking him was just a formality. Anyone with eyes could see that Al is not all right. It's not over, I say. You can improve your rank if you... My voice trails off when he looks up at me. I don't even know what I would say to him if I finished my sentence. There is no strategy for stage two. It reaches deep into the heart of who we are and tests whatever courage is there. See, he says, it's not that simple. I know it's not. I don't think you do, he says, shaking his head. His chin wobbles. For you, it's easy. All of this is easy. That's not true. Yeah, it is. He closes his eyes. You aren't helping me by pretending it isn't. I'm not sure you can help me at all. I feel like I just walked into a downpour, and all my clothes are heavy with water, like I am heavy and awkward and useless. I don't know if he means that no one can help him, or if I specifically can't help him, but I would not be okay with either interpretation. I want to help him. I am powerless to do so. I start to say, meaning to apologize, but for what? For being more dauntless than he is? For not knowing what to say? The tears that have been gathering in his eyes spill over, wetting his cheeks. Want to be alone. I nod and turn away from him. Leaving him is not a good idea, but I can't stop myself. The door clicks into place behind me, and I keep walking. I walk past the drinking fountain and through the tunnels that seem endless the day I got here but now barely register in my mind. This is not the first time I have failed my family since I got here, but for some reason, it feels that way. Every other time I failed, I knew what to do but chose not to do it. This time, I did not know what to do. Have I lost the ability to see what people need? Have I lost part of myself? I keep walking. I somehow find the hallway I sat in the day Edward left. I don't want to be alone, but I don't feel like I have much of a choice. I close my eyes and pay attention to the cold stone beneath me and breathe the musty underground air. Triss! Someone calls from the end of the hallway. Uriah jogs toward me. Behind him are Lynn and Marlene. Lynn is holding a muffin. Thought I would find you here. He crouches near my feet. I heard you got ranked first. So you just wanted to congratulate me? I smirk. Well, thanks. Someone should, he says. And I figured your friends might not be so congratulatory, since their ranks aren't as high. So quit moping and come with us. I'm going to shoot a muffin off Marlene's head. The idea is so ridiculous I can't stop myself from laughing. I get up and follow Uriah to the end of the hallway, where Marlene and Lynn are waiting. Lynn narrows her eyes at me, but Marlene grins. Why aren't you out celebrating? She asks. You're practically guaranteed a top 10 spot if you keep it up. She's too dauntless for the other transfers, Uriah says. And too abnegation to celebrate, remarks Lynn. I ignore her. Why are you shooting a muffin off Marlene's head? She bet me I couldn't aim well enough to hit a small object from 100 feet, Uriah explains. I bet her she didn't have the guts to stand there as I tried. It works out well, really. The training room where I first fired a gun is not far from my hidden hallway. We get there in under a minute, and Uriah flips on a light switch. It looks the same as the last time I was there. Targets on one end of the room, a table with guns on the other. "They just keep these lying around?" I ask. "Yeah, but they aren't loaded." Uriah pulls up his shirt. There is a gun stuck under the waistband of his pants, right under a tattoo. I stare at the tattoo, trying to figure out what it is, but then he lets his shirt fall. "Okay," he says. "Go stand in front of a target." Marlene walks away, a skip in her step. "You aren't seriously going to shoot at her, are you?" I ask Uriah. "It's not a real gun," says Lynn quietly. "It's got plastic pellets in it. The worst it'll do is sting her face, maybe give her a welt. What do you think we are, stupid?" Marlene stands in front of one of the targets and sets the muffin on her head. Uriah squints one eye as he aims the gun. "Wait!" calls out Marlene. She breaks off a piece of the muffin and pops it in her mouth.
"Okay,"
she shouts the word, garbled by food. She gives Uriah a thumbs up. "I take it your ranks were good," I say to Lynn. She nods. Uriah's second. I'm first. Marlene's fourth. "You're only first by a hair," says Uriah as he aims. He squeezes the trigger. The muffin falls off Marlene's head. She didn't even blink.
"We both win," she shouts.
"You miss your old faction?" Lynn asks me. "Sometimes," I say. It was calmer, not as exhausting. Marlene picks up the muffin from the ground and bites into it. Uriah shouts, "Gross!" "Initiation's supposed to wear us down to who we really are. That's what Eric says, anyway," Lynn says. She arches an eyebrow. "Four says it's to prepare us." "Well, they don't agree on much." I nod. Four told me that Eric's vision for Dauntless is not what it's supposed to be, but I wish he would tell me exactly what he thinks the right vision is. I get glimpses of it every so often. The Dauntless cheering when I jumped off the building, the net of arms that caught me after ziplining. But they are not enough. Has he read the Dauntless Manifesto? Is that what he believes in? In ordinary acts of bravery? The door to the training room opens. Shauna, Zeke, and Four walk in just as Uriah fires at another target. The plastic pellet bounces off the center of the target and rolls along the ground.
"I thought I heard something in here," says Four. "Turns out it's my idiot brother," says Zeke.
"You're not supposed to be in here after hours."
"Careful, or Four will tell Eric, and then you'll be as good as scalped."
Uriah wrinkles his nose at his brother and puts the pellet gun away. Marlene crosses the room, taking bites of her muffin, and Four steps away from the door to let us file out. "You wouldn't tell Eric," says Lynn, eyeing Four suspiciously. "No, I wouldn't," he says. As I pass him, he rests his hand on the top of my back to usher me out, his palm pressing between my shoulder blades. I shiver. I hope he can't tell. The others walk down the hallway, Zeke and Uriah shoving each other. Marlene splitting her muffin with Shauna, Lynn marching in front. I start to follow them.
"Wait a second," Four says.
I turn toward him, wondering which version of Four I'll see now. The one who scolds me, or the one who climbs Ferris wheels with me? He smiles a little, but the smile doesn't spread to his eyes, which look tense and worried.
"You belong here. You know that?" he says. "You belong with us. It'll be over soon, so just hold on, okay?"
He scratches behind his ear and looks away, like he's embarrassed by what he said. I stare at him. I feel my heart beat everywhere, even in my toes. I feel like doing something bold, but I could just as easily walk away. I'm not sure which option is smarter or better. I'm not sure that I care. I reach out and take his hand. His fingers slide between mine. I can't breathe. I stare up at him, and he stares down at me. For a long moment, we stay that way. Then I pull my hand away and run after Uriah and Lynn and Marlene. Maybe now he thinks I'm stupid or strange. Maybe it was worth it.
I get back to the dormitory before anyone else does. And when they start to trickle in, I get into bed and pretend to be asleep. I don't need any of them. Not if they're going to react this way when I do well. If I can make it through initiation, I will be dauntless, and I won't have to see them anymore. I don't need them. But do I want them? Every tattoo I got with them is a mark of their friendship, and almost every time I have laughed in this dark place was because of them. I don't want to lose them, but I feel like I have already. After at least a half hour of racing thoughts, I roll onto my back and open my eyes. The dormitory is dark now. Everyone has gone to bed, probably exhausted from resenting me so much, I think with a wry smile. As if coming from the most hated faction wasn't enough, now I'm showing them up, too. I get out of bed to get a drink of water. I'm not thirsty, but I need to do something. My bare feet make sticky sounds on the floor as I walk, my hands skimming the wall to keep my path straight. A bulb glows blue above the drinking fountain. I tug my hair over one shoulder and bend over. As soon as the water touches my lips, I hear voices at the end of the hallway. I creep closer to them, trusting the dark to keep me hidden. So far, there haven't been any signs of it. Eric's voice. Signs of what? Well, you wouldn't have seen much of it yet, someone replies. A female voice, cold and familiar, but familiar like a dream, not a real person. Combat training shows you nothing. The simulations, however, reveal who the divergent rebels are, if there are any, so we will have to examine the footage several times to be sure. The word divergent makes me go cold. I lean forward, my back pressed to the stone, to see who the familiar voice belongs to. Don't forget the reason I had Max appoint you, the voice says. Your first priority is always finding them. Always. I won't forget. I shift a few inches forward, hoping I am still hidden. Whoever that voice belongs to, she is pulling the strings. She is responsible for Eric's leadership position. She is the one who wants me dead. I tilt my head forward, straining to see them before they turn the corner. Then someone grabs me from behind. I start to scream, but a hand claps over my mouth. It smells like soap, and it's big enough to cover the lower half of my face. I thrash, but the arms holding me are too strong, and I bite down on one of the fingers. Ow! A rough voice cries. Shut up, and keep her mouth covered. That voice is higher than the average male's, and clearer. Peter. A strip of dark cloth covers my eyes, and a new pair of hands ties it at the back of my head. I struggle to breathe. There are at least two hands on my arms, dragging me forward, and one on my back, shoving me in the same direction, and one on my mouth, keeping my screams in. Three people. My chest hurts. I can't resist three people on my own. Wonder what it sounds like when a stiff begs for mercy, Peter says with a chuckle. Hurry up. I try to focus on the hand on my mouth. There must be something distinct about it that will make him easier to identify. His identity is a problem I can solve. I need to solve a problem right now, or I will panic. The palm is sweaty and soft. I clench my teeth and breathe through my nose. The soap smell is familiar. Lemongrass and sage. The same smell surrounds Al's bunk. A weight drops into my stomach. I hear the crash of water against rocks. We are near the chasm. We must be above it, given the volume of the sound. I press my lips together to keep from screaming. If we are above the chasm, I know what they intend to do to me. Lift her up, come on! I thrash, and their rough skin grates against mine. But I know it's useless. I scream too, knowing that no one can hear me here. I will survive until tomorrow. I will. The hands push me around and up and slam my spine into something hard and cold. Judging by its width and curvature, it is a metal railing. It is the metal railing, the one that overlooks the chasm. My breath's wheeze and mist touches the back of my neck. The hands force my back to arch over the railing. My feet leave the ground. And my attackers are the only thing keeping me from falling into the water. A heavy hand gropes along my chest.
You sure you're 16, Stiff? Doesn't feel like you're more than 12.
The other boy laughs. Bile rises in my throat, and I swallow the bitter taste.
Wait. I think I found something.
His hand squeezes me. I bite my tongue to keep from screaming. More laughter. Al's hand slips from my mouth.
Stop that,
he snaps. I recognize his low, distinct voice. When Al lets go of me, I thrash again and slip down to the ground. This time I bite down as hard as I can on the first arm I find. I hear a scream and clench my jaw harder, tasting blood. Something hard strikes my face. White heat races through my head. It would have been pain if adrenaline wasn't coursing through me like acid. The boy wrenches his trapped arm away from me and throws me to the ground. I bang my elbow against stone and bring my hands up to my head to remove the blindfold. A foot drives into my side, forcing the air from my lungs. I gasp and cough and claw at the back of my head. Someone grabs a handful of my hair and slams my head against something hard. A scream of pain bursts from my mouth, and I feel dizzy. Clumsily, I fumble along the side of my head to find the edge of the blindfold. I drag my heavy hand up, taking the blindfold with it, and blink. The scene before me is sideways and bobs up and down. I see someone running toward us, and someone running away. Someone large. Al. I grab the railing next to me and haul myself to my feet. Peter wraps a hand around my throat and lifts me up, his thumb wedged under my chin. His hair, which is usually shiny and smooth, is tousled and sticks to his forehead. His pale face is contorted, and his teeth are gritted, and he holds me over the chasm as spots appear on the edges of my vision, crowding around his face, green and pink and blue. He says nothing. I try to kick him, but my legs are too short. My lungs scream for air. I hear a shout, and he releases me. I stretch out my arms as I fall, gasping, and my armpits slam into the railing. I hook my elbows over it and groan. Mist touches my ankles. The world dips and sways around me. And someone is on the pit floor. Drew, screaming. I hear thumps, kicks, groans. I blink a few times and focus as hard as I can on the only face I can see. It is contorted with anger. His eyes are dark blue.
Four.
I croak. I close my eyes, and hands wrap around my arms, right where they join with the shoulder. He pulls me over the railing and against his chest, gathering me into his arms, easing an arm under my knees. I press my face into his shoulder, and there is a sudden, hollow silence.